APCHO is the Association of Asian Pacific Community Health Organizations. APCHO promotes advocacy, collaboration, and leadership to improve the health of Asian Americans, Native Hawaiians, and Pacific Islanders. We offer audio recordings of our trainings for people with limited or interrupted access to the internet and all who prefer audio-based learning. This session is part 2 of 3 and took place during the Culturally Appropriate Healthy Eating Educational Tool for Asian Americans, Filipino, Filipina, and Philippinex, and Hmong Editions webinar. It features Darius Ramirez, Katrina Gonzalez, and Isabel Rosales from Mabuhay Health Center. These speakers will share a brief history of the Philippines, health disparities among Filipino Americans, and how the Mabuhay Health Center supports the Filipino community in San Francisco. These speakers close by sharing recipes of popular Filipino dishes. This information is up to date as of December 14th, 2022.
So we're Mabuhay Health Center. We're a free clinic located in San Francisco. Next slide. And just a quick introduction again. My name's Katrina. I'm the administrative director for Mabuhay Health Center.
And I'm Isabel Rosales. I'm a public health chair for this year.
And my name is Darius Ramirez. I'm one of the public health directors for this year. And so to start it off, we'll be talking about some of the history of Filipino Americans. It's because history has a big part in shaping culture. And so that can be seen also in the food that we'll talk about. So definitely we want to talk about some of the history that led to a lot of these, a lot of our culture. And so for example, one of these things is there's a lot of traces of Chinese, Spanish, and American cuisine that can be found in a modern day Filipino cuisine as well. And so for the next slide, we have a timeline on the Philippine history, starting in October 18, 1587. First Filipinos landed in modern Bay Moro Bay as part of the Acapulco-Manila galleon trade. 1763, in St. Malo, the settlement of St. Malo in Louisiana was formed by Filipinos who jumped Spanish ships during the Acapulco-Manila galleon trade, and they came to be known as Manila Men. 1565 to 1898, we were under the Spanish rule, and the Spanish-American war happened at the end of that. So this began in response to Cuba's struggle for independence and ended with the Treaty of Paris. So that relinquished sovereignty of various territories. Philippines was included in this. And so it was given to the United States with $20 million as well, compensation. So we were, the Philippines land was given away to US. And so in 1899 to 1902, there was the Philippine-American War. So sometime about 3-year war that began between the Filipino nationalists and the US government. And so after this, we were then under the American rule from 1898 until 1946, when we got our independence. This was following World War II. During World War II, the Japanese invaded the Philippines, and Filipinos fought alongside the United States against the Japanese military. And so afterwards, after that, the Philippines were declared independent officially on July 4th, 1946, following World War II, is when the Philippines was becoming an independent republic. So a lot of this has a lot of history that definitely shaped the way a lot of our culture is. This can be seen in, for example, our food, in our dances, in many things, the influence of the Chinese, Spanish, American, and other cultures as well. Right, and so to go a little bit more in depth in that, so before colonization, 3000 BC, arrival of the Malay people from Malaysia, there's three diverse ethnic waves, modern-day Bontoc and other Luzon tribes, modern-day Bicolano, Bisayan, and Tagalog tribes, and also Muslim Malays. So this can also be seen in our language, where there's many, many, many languages in the Philippines. The national language is officially Tagalog. However, there's many languages, I believe over 100, because there's so many different islands and so many different people that have been there for so long over time. Islam was the major religion initially introduced in Mindanao and the Cebu archipelago. And then there was also a lot of trades going with various cultures, mainly the Chinese, but also the Indians and Arabs. They also had a writing system based on Sanskrit called Baibayan. And so before the arrival of the Spanish, the Philippines did not have a national identity. And so before the arrival of the Spanish, actually, they didn't know that we actually had our own language of Babayan. So before this, they Filipinos were thought of to be as illiterate, but we did have Babayan. And so and during this time too, there was with all those trades that happened with China, there's that Chinese influence on our food. This can be seen, for example, the rice that we use in all of our dishes as well. For example, our use of soy sauce in our dishes, fish sauce, we call it patis. Noodles, for us, it's pancit, and also fried egg rolls, and for us, it's lumpia. And so under the Spanish rule, in the next slide, it'll be between that 1565 and 1898 time. And so why was the Philippines colonized? So one of the main reasons why was because they wanted to involve themselves in the spice trade amongst Asia. Philippines was seen as kind of the gateway to the Orient, was what they said. So they wanted to really get involved with the trade with China and Japan. And also they wanted to convert Filipinos to Christianity, which can be seen in a lot of our culture as well. It's not not everybody is, but there's definitely a lot of Christian and Catholic religion that's present in the Filipino culture. And so how did it affect the Philippines? That there's the heavy influence on religion, art, music, food, and fashion, including Catholicism, and also colonial mentality that can still be a part of the culture to this day. And so in terms of the Spanish, some of the foods that were influenced was cattle raising, cured sausage and meats, Christmas feast traditions, rich meat stews, roasted whole pigs, or for us that's lechon, and also dairy sweets. For example, flan is seen as in our culture as well as the Spanish culture. And so under the American rule from 1898 to 1946, we were colonized because they wanted, they claimed their intent for tutelage and preparation for eventual independence. Right? And they also were interested in trades with the Philippines as well as the other countries of Asia like China and Japan, that the Spanish was also interested in. Some of the top imports from the Philippines that went to the United States actually was sugar, tobacco, dairy, meat, and coconut products, and as well as using Filipinos as cheap labor, especially in the agricultural industry, whether that was through immigration, or that's through us directly sending over it from the Philippines. And how it affected the Philippines is that it increased agriculture and industrial industries. It introduced free public school education system, emphasized English. So definitely English is now a big part of the Philippines as well as Tagalog. It introduced film, fashion, and literature cultures, and also it was named Tagalog as the national language. So the struggle for Philippine independence shaped Filipinos to work towards self-government. And this is why at the end of the Philippine-American rule, Philippines did gain their independence. And so some of the food influences that the American rule had on us was canned goods, for example, Spam and Vienna sausage are very big parts of our Filipino diet, as well as fast foods, hamburgers, fried chicken, and steaks. So many of these are seen as like very fast and easy things to get, as well as like daily life, get this at fast foods, for example, like McDonald's, very big. Jollibee is actually a little bit bigger in the Philippines than McDonald's. So if you don't have Jollibee, I highly recommend that. And so in terms of now immigration outside the Philippines, so from Philippines to the United States, the first Asians to arrive in the U.S. in the 16th century, a mass migration began in the early 20th century following the Treaty of Paris, which marked the end of the American Revolutionary War. In the 1920s, a majority of Filipinx immigrants to the U.S. were technically unskilled. Many of these were farm laborers. And so immigration decreased in the 1930s, except for Filipinx veterans who served in the U.S. Navy. This is because a lot of policy changes that greatly limited the immigration. And so Philippine independence was recognized by the U.S. on July 4th, 1946. Filipinx American numbers continued to grow, especially in the 1960s. And after the passage of the Immigration and Nationality Act of 1965, during Lyndon B. Johnson's presidency, a majority of Filipinx immigrants to the United States became skilled professionals and technicians. In fact, one of the highest number of professions that of immigrants out of the Philippines is nurses. It's actually the number one, not product per se, but the number one output out of the Philippines is nurses. And so now a little bit of history of Philippines in the United States. So one of the phrases we love to stand by is that we stand on the shoulders of those who have come before us. And this is because all of our, for example, all the Filipinos currently in the Philippines or currently in other countries like the United States would not be able to get to where they are without our ancestors before us that have really led the way, paved the way, really started and started these routes that we could really start on. Right. So in the 1920s, Filipinos are recruited from the Philippines by the United States due to damage for low wage labor for the agricultural industry. And SF became one of the main centers of the Filipino community. In 1961, there was redevelopment of SOMA, which is the Sato Market District, which is actually the one that we primarily serve, where MHC is primarily based on, which is SOMA, to build the Yerba Buena Center to attract businesses and tourists. This place is, but this displaces 4,000 elders, retirees, Filipinos, and working class people. And in 1965, the Immigration Act of 1965 abolished the quota system and allowed for Filipino families to immigrate into the US. In 1968, seniors, predominantly Filipinos, living in international hotel were forced and evicted out. And soon after, Tenants and Owners Development Corporation was established for replacement housing for low-income seniors. Filipino community organizations were established, including the FEC and the West Bay, two very, very, very helpful organizations to the Filipino community. In 1997, the Delta Hotel burns down and is sold by Dr. Mario Borja to the TODCO, the nonprofit, on the condition that it be turned into affordable housing and to continue the vision of having a community space for Filipino seniors and immigrant families. The Filipino American Development Foundation, or the FADF, was established by Dr. Borja's vision, came true as the Bayanihan House in, starting in 2001, and Bayanihan Community Center starting in 2005. And those are two very important centers and organization spaces that definitely play a big part in the SOMA community, as well as the whole Filipino community of San Francisco, that we definitely do love to work with as well from Mabuhay. And just an aside is that it's important to acknowledge that the space we currently hold was not easily just provided for us. This comes from many years of struggle and hardship of many Filipinos and allies that I just read off. So a lot of these spaces, like I said, is due to the shoulders of those who have come before us. Right. And so some of the things that we're still working through as MHC, and things that have done a lot of work, thank these organizations and people before us, but still need a lot of work, are some disparities among Filipino Americans. For example, the lack of health insurance, cultural beliefs about health, access to healthcare, and reliance on family support. And a lot of these are very custom disparities that make it hard for Filipino health to improve sometimes. And so healthcare disparities among Filipino Americans. The next slide is that approximately 67% of Filipino Americans in the study were hypertensive. So a lot of this is due to some of the foods that we have from the cultural foods, as well as some of the limitations we have in terms of the space that we're given, as well as genetics. A lot of this causes hypertension. And just as was explained earlier, which is why what is diabetes, hypertension is one of the most prevalent diseases in the Filipino culture, Filipino community. The present study confirmed a high rate of hypertension among Filipino Americans, and adding salt, physical inactivity, and old age were significantly associated with hypertension status. For example, when I mentioned earlier that the Filipinos were moved out of their hotels and out of their living and housing spaces, and were pretty much just like compressed in, into a very small, like single room housing occupancies where physical activity is very hard to do. So that's, for example, one of the things that our history has affected us and caused some disparities, right? And so Katrina will talk about some of the work that we as Mabuhay Health Center do to try to combat these disparities.
Yes, so my name again is Katrina, and I'll be talking more about our health center. If I say MHC, it stands for Mabuhay Health Center. So next slide. So the reason why MHC was founded was because a while ago, there was a group of students called PUSO, also known as the Filipinos at UCSF Student Organization, who held annual health fairs in the South Market District in San Francisco. And during these annual health fairs, they found that a lot of the elderly Filipino patients had very little follow-up in between the annual health fairs and returned annually with the same problems. And therefore, an annual needs assessment was made to kind of understand the needs of the patients in the South of Market District community, specifically the Filipino patients. And through this informal needs assessment, they found that many of the patients had a limited English proficiency. They had low medical adherence, low PCP follow-up. They had poor access to clinical services. They had a sense of hiya or shame when it came to asking for help in their health. They also faced other cultural barriers to healthcare, as well as a greater susceptibility to certain diseases. So on the next slide, in 2009, a UCSF medical student, Alvin Teodoro, founded MHC to address these issues, as well as provide regular care for Filipino patients in the South of Market District in San Francisco. And the next slide. So what is Mabuhay Health Center? MHC is a volunteer-run community-based organization that partners with organizations such as Somas Pilipinas, UCSF, and more recently, the National Association of Free and Charitable Clinics. We are 100% run by volunteers, community donations, and grants. Our volunteers consist of undergraduate students, post-bac students, graduate students, a lot of whom are pre-health students. We also currently collaborate with professional students from UCSF or the University of California, San Francisco. And these students include students in the School of Medicine, Pharmacy, Dentistry, nurse practitioners, as well as physical therapy. In addition to that, our general volunteers are broken up into 9 different committees with their own unique responsibilities that contribute to our mission as a health center. For example, Isabel and Darius are doing great work in the public health committee. So in the next slide, this kind of lists out our health services that we offer at MHC. This isn't an exhaustive list by any means. We're constantly trying to improve our services for our community, but I think MHC is a really unique space because we really do create a care model that is collaborative, holistic, and patient-centered. At MHC, one of our main goals is to augment primary care and address any gaps in understandings that our patient may have, as well as connect patients who are uninsured or underinsured to insurance or primary care providers. In MHC, we partner with volunteer preceptors, which include physicians, pharmacists, dentists, physical therapists, nurse practitioners, and mental health providers who all collaborate and apply their different perspectives when creating a patient's care plan. All of our providers also have a comprehensive background in public health, and we always try to draw from our background in public health when caring for our patients in order to promote preventative healthcare. We also volunteer with MHCs or UCSF students to create a healing space that many patients find refuge in. Our space is awesome because we find that a lot of patients actually come to MHC just for fun, to talk to our volunteers, talk to our preceptors, just to kind of sit, learn about different health topics while enjoying a healthy meal. During MHC, we host solid talks or health education sit-down sessions where we talk about topics like smoking cessation, hypertension, diabetes, sleep hygiene, etc. And we always try to target issues that affect our community specifically. In addition to that, we also offer physical exam, oral health and oral cancer screenings, and medication therapy management, as well as behavioral health services. We have a professional psychologist and psychiatric nurse practitioner, and they have been helping a lot as well as destigmatize mental health issues. And lastly, like Darius touched on, since food is a big part of our Filipino culture, before COVID, we would normally cook and offer meals to our patients. At the end of our visit, the public health committee would find healthy versions of Filipino foods that our patients are familiar with. Unfortunately, since COVID started, we've had to put a hold on cooking, but we're really hoping to continue that in the next coming years once COVID has died down a bit. And then the next slide. We also partner with various community organizations such as the South of Market Community Action Network, or SOMCAN, the Filipino Service Providers Network, Canon KIPS, the Filipino Senior Resource Center, also known as PSRC, Bindle Stiff Studios, which is the art center at in San Francisco, as well as Bessie Carmichael, which is an after-school program for Filipino children, Filipino immigrants, as well as APCHO, of course. For APCHO, we have been reviewing their Healthy Plate initiatives and resources, as well as helped with providing translations with our language and cultural advocacy team. And then, yeah, I'll pass it on to Isabel, who will talk about Filipino food and the My Plate resource.
So hi, everyone. My name is Isabel. Next slide, please. So Filipino cuisine centers around a combination of sweet, sour, and salty flavors. Dishes can range from simple fried fish and rice to more complex curries, paellas, and stews. And there's a lot of Spanish and Asian influence within all of our dishes. Next slide, please. So why are culturally relevant materials important? First is to celebrate food as part of our culture and identity. When there's a sense of understanding among healthcare providers about the patient's culture or identity, the patient might feel as though their specific needs are being recognized and addressed. The second point is that it's important to be culturally competent. Oftentimes, Filipinos have a sense of hiya or shame when it comes to asking for help. So culturally relevant materials allow patients to feel more comfortable with providers and will allow them to feel confident when taking care of their health in their daily life. And the last important point I want to bring up is culture and health literacy. There's a huge misconception that Filipino food is unhealthy, but that's not true. Presenting culturally relevant materials like the MyPlate resources will help patients better understand how we should portion our native dishes to have a healthy, balanced diet. And then next, please. So yeah, one dish that we are familiar with as Filipinos is chicken tinola, which is a warm, comforting soup usually served with white rice. This is a dish where different ingredients such as like proteins, health fats, vegetables, and carbs are mixed into one pot. And this is what a healthy plate may look like for Filipino patients. And this would just be like an example of an ingredient list that we would use in order to make My Plate healthy version of chicken tinola. And then next slide, please. And then here would just be the simple directions. Next slide. We also have other resources for other dishes such as sinigang, pansit, and karagay. And so thank you. Salamat. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube at Mabuhay Health Center, or you can visit our website and you can contact us at that email there.
This episode was brought to you by APCHO and MHP Salud as a collaborative activity of the National Training and Technical Assistance Cooperative Agreement. To find out more, visit apcho.org or mhpsalud.org. Support for this episode comes from the Health Resources and Services Administration, or HRSA, of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, or HHS. It is part of an award with 0% financed with non-governmental sources. The contents of this podcast episode are those of the author or authors, and do not necessarily represent the official views of, nor an endorsement, by HRSA, HHS, or the U.S. government.